Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Doctor, lawyer, idiot, chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. Temper all the times, the times I've tried.
Welcome to Court Appointed, QD's perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, judge, and film critic.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
You're a film connoisseur as well.
Well, I get stuck on a few that I like, and I watch them over and over. That was one of the comments that Mary and I made when we were watching Christmas Vacation. Of course, we watch it every year. But one of the comments was, I could watch this show, in this movie, over and over. It doesn't matter to me. I watch it every year. I watch it several times a year. It's fine with me. I like it.
Yeah, I don't have to watch it around Christmas time. I'll watch it just about any time.
Yeah, it's always funny. I just enjoy it and somewhat identify with it.
So you had the idea that we should both watch this movie, this timeless Christmas classic, and see how many different laws or lawsuits or different things that jumped out at us that might be caused to have to go see a lawyer or possibly be arrested.
Yeah, there were some things, as I'm thinking about it from a legal standpoint, and I thought, you know, there's so many things that are funny, but, you know, in real life, Chevy Chase wouldn't be walking around a free man.
Yeah, that's true. Well, should we go through it one by one, or should we, like, compare the list? Let me ask you this. How many did you come up with through the whole movie?
I came up with 18 or 19, because one of them isn't really a law, but it offended me, so I had to put it down there. But I have 19 if I count that one.
How many do you think I have, more or less?
By your reaction, I'd say less.
I have 47.
47? Well, see, that's the difference between a layman and a lawyer then.
Now, I mean, some of them I'm breaking down. They might be in the same scene, but there's multiple different little nuances about it. So I thought, you know, that's, some of them are broken down.
Okay. Well, I don't think I got that intricate, but all the related charges it could be. I probably went with the broader scope. But I think that if we go in chronological order, I think that we can probably reach a arbitrary decision.
Okay. So the first one I came up with was the very opening scene on the roadway. There are some definite issues with that. First of all, the truck with the country yokels there that are tailgating them, that's tailgating is against the law. So that was the first thing I saw, was the truck is tailgating. So there's number one.
Right. Okay.
The second, number two, I think Clark is guilty of reckless driving by some of his actions there, the way he was passing and flying along. In addition, number three, I think he was speeding, and he definitely, I don't know what the speed limit was, but he was definitely going too fast for the conditions because it was snowing out. The road was probably icy, and he shouldn't be driving that fast. Number four was distracted driving. During that time period, he's not paying attention to the road. He's looking over to the right whenever he flips in the bird. And then finally,
anytime you end up under a log truck, you've been distracted somewhere.
That's true. There's destruction of property when he vaults over off the road through the property into the fence and sign, destroys that. So he could be sued by the property owner for that. And the last thing that I noticed is that I think that probably there's some seatbelt violations there, because after the crash, the kids are up in the front seat with them. They probably weren't restrained.
Now, I agree with you on that. I picked up on that, too, with the kids ending up in the front seat after the landing. They obviously were not belted in. The only thing I would say, you probably have to look at the seatbelt laws from 1989 when that movie came out, because I don't even think cars were equipped with backseat seatbelts in those days.
Yeah. You know, that's a good question. I don't know. I definitely remember riding in the back of a station wagon, very similar to that, and not wearing seatbelts.
Yeah. I can remember being in a van that all we had were the front two seats, and after that, it was just wide open van with kids running and rolling around.
Oh, yeah, those were fun.
Yeah. So, you know, I put that down as a seatbelt law. The kid's not belted in, but with an ear towards, they probably didn't have a seatbelt law in those days, and probably they didn't even have seatbelts.
Now, well, I don't know. I think seatbelt laws go back pretty farther than you might think. But
now, there was one in there, that another one that would go right along with, like you say, breaking it down, and that's there are road rage laws in a lot of states.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And way he was acting and, you know, dueling back and forth with them, I think he obviously would have been under road rage. And then the only other one that I'd add in there is when he did crash through that fence and everything. I mean, he obviously had a wreck, and he, you know, left the scene of an accident. He didn't call the police and report it or anything else, and he obviously had an accident that tore up somebody's property.
Yeah, that's true. I can see that one. That's a good one. That's a nice pickup, a nuance there. So now, once they're at the Christmas tree farm and they're walking around, Audrey, I think, is it Audrey?
Yes.
The daughter, yeah.
Yeah.
Audrey, I think that she's definitely under 18, so she's a minor, and she has frostbite. So I think there's some child neglect issues there because they allow their daughter to be out in the cold like that.
To freeze to death.
To freeze. So I'm thinking there's some possible child neglect there.
Yeah. And along with that, in my opinion, I know that where they crashed through the tree farm sign, but I think it was obvious where they were walking. They were no longer in the tree farm. They had progressed well beyond where the tree farm was. And the tree they were cutting down was on somebody else's property. I feel certain that they were trespassing.
I thought they might be too, but I didn't write that one down because I wasn't certain. I was kind of given the benefit of the doubt at this point.
But it was a wide open area with this one tree with the sunbeam shining down upon it, recognizing it as a Griswold family Christmas tree.
Yeah.
So I don't think tree farms are lined up. The tree farms I've seen, those are rows of trees all lined up within a contained area that you cut down. You don't just wander out into the countryside and cut whatever you see.
The now, once they forgot their saw, so they couldn't cut it down, they had to dig it out.
Yeah. Which,
if you've ever tried to dig a tree out, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I would like to know how the four of them carried that monster to the car and laced it down.
Yeah. And the problem is once they laced it down, I think they're guilty of an improper load. The way it's attached to the car, because they definitely can't see out the front window.
Yeah, can't see out the front or the back. The roots are hanging down to the back. That's what I wrote down too, is that they were driving with an obstructed view front and back.
Yeah.
There's no way they could see.
That's the opening scene. That's quite a few already right there.
Yeah, that's pretty good haul.
Were there any that we missed?
That was everything that I had written down to augment the ones that you had. So however many you had, add about three to it. Up to that point, and that's about where we are.
Yeah. So now they get back to the house, and they have the Christmas tree, and they're getting ready to take it inside, and the neighbors come over and want to give their opinion about it. And he says, where are you going to put a tree that big? And Clark responds, well, bend over, and I'll show you. So I think he's threatening to assault him with a Christmas tree.
Well, no, he says, I'm not talking to you. And
well,
so then
true, yes.
He looks over at Julie Louis Dreyfus and she looks up at him like, what are you inferring that to me? Which to me makes it even worse.
Yeah. So there's some threat of some sort of assault with a Christmas tree.
I agree.
In that scene.
So, mm-hmm.
Did you have that one?
Yep. I had that down. I didn't know exactly how to put it. It wasn't really assault, but it was a veiled threat.
Yes. I don't think it was very veiled. Putting a Christmas tree where the sun doesn't shine, especially one that's that full with that much sap.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was a winner. That tree was a winner.
So then we cut to Clark's place of employment.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking to one of his coworkers, and he admits that he actually wrote a $7,500 check that did not have sufficient funds to cover that check.
That's true.
And that's against the law to write a check. That's in West Virginia. That's called uttering.
Yeah, that's uttering or kiting.
Yeah, my first year of law school, I was in Ohio, and evidently their law, when you bounce a check like that, they don't call it uttering. They made fun of me for it. Like, where are you from? Uttering.
Well, it was invented by a cow.
Yeah, so. But it's against the law to write a check that you don't have funds for. So
that's true.
Trouble for that.
That's true. I mean, you can play the float on getting the money to the bank before the check does, but in those days you had more room to float. And these days that wouldn't fly.
Yeah. So they talk about, Clark says to his boss later on when they're coming by, he says, oh, Mr. So-and-so, we got your Christmas card.
Right.
Gax's company card.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, okay. But in this day and age, I don't think people send out Christmas cards anymore. You send out holiday cards. Because it's actually kind of funny whenever they say Christmas card, then he tells somebody that walks by, Happy Hanukkah. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, there are people of different faiths, so businesses don't send out Christmas cards. They, you know, it's holiday bonuses or holiday cards and things like that. So, well, you know, I mean, you could actually probably, if you were a company that did that, you might be able to be sued for discrimination because if you were doing that.
So. Well, he also tells one of the guys, kiss my ass, tells one of the other guys, you kiss his ass, you know, so.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if that's against the law.
No, but it's just the whole, sets the whole tone for what he thinks of all those lackeys following the boss around.
Exactly. All right. So the next scene is they're Clark is out doing some Christmas shopping, and he's there at the counter with the lady in the red outfit.
Yes.
Did you come across anything in there?
I said that in this day and age, especially. I mean, it is then. But in this day and age, especially, that was sexual harassment.
Well, I don't know that it's sexual harassment per se, like as a typical cause of action, because you have to have kind of a power dynamic for sexual harassment. Usually, it occurs in a workplace, so there has to be some sort of quid pro quo sexual harassment. Like, you know, if you have sex with me, I'll give you a promotion, or alternatively, it makes somebody feel uncomfortable in their workplace. But usually, it's between coworkers, not just a customer being obnoxious with someone like that.
Right.
So I don't know that that's sexual harassment, like in our definition of it.
Well, it is harassment. I mean, you have people that have to have the job and they have to put up with that. I know that, you know, like my children and still buffering, they also went over Christmas vacation. And mm-hmm. this was one of the points that Taylor took great exception to as somebody that is a service worker. Of mm-hmm. having to put up with people like Chevy Chase was portraying, that's one of the worst parts of the job, and that somebody's just trying to struggle and pay the bills, and they've got to put up with somebody who walks that line between little bit out of line and total indecency.
Well, I don't know. I think Mary at the store there, the lingerie section, was kind of having fun with it.
You think?
In my opinion, I think so.
But I would say in this day and age, you'd be in trouble.
The one thing that came across for me is he says that his wife is dead.
Yeah.
So he fraudulently states his wife is dead. So say he does that. He tells Mary this. That's the woman's name. She says her name is Mary.
Right.
And so if he actually said his wife was dead and he consummated the relationship with her under these false pretenses, then that could be sex under false pretenses or technically rape by deception. Because he's made a lie. He's actually a married man, and he would be sleeping with her. And the only reason, one of the reasons he slept with her is because he said that his wife was dead, so he was not attached. So that's a deceptive practice.
Well, he does awkwardly say, he says, rest her soul. We're divorced.
Yeah.
So he does kind of change that. He says they're divorced, but so he kind of corrects that a little bit. I think he feels a little guilty.
That's true, but at the same time, you know, he isn't divorced. So
right.
That's, again, it's still false pretenses, or, you know, that could be a crime by doing that. So
here's a little tidbit for you. You know what that lady that was the actress that played that part, you know what her last name was?
No.
Scorsese.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I didn't look it up to see if she's related to Martin Scorsese, but I would say there's a real good possibility.
Well, and you know, we were watching it here, and I told everybody that the boss in that movie is actually Bill Murray's brother.
Yeah.
So everyone was kind of surprised about that too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. He's had a lot of bit parts.
Yeah. Now, that was all I had for that scene.
That was all I had too. Yeah.
Now, whenever the in-laws are and the family are coming over, Audrey says that she has to sleep with her brother. And, you know, taking that in a biblical sense, sleeping with
she didn't mean that.
Well, but I'm just saying, if we're pointing everything out, sleeping with a sibling is incest, and that is actually a crime. It's against the law. So,
well, she was not a willing participant. She's because she makes a comment. She says, God knows what he does in bed by himself, and now he's going to be sleeping with me.
That's true. So what do you have next, Tommy?
Well, what I've got next is they were outside. He and Russ were out there putting up the lights, and he's, of course, encountering several different difficulties along the way. And on one of them, he's stapling the lights along the top, and he slips and falls and slides down the roof, and he grabs the gutter so he doesn't crash down head first. And when he does, the gutter comes loose, and a long ice spear comes flying out of the end of the gutter right through the neighbor's Todd and Margot's window and crashes into their stereo system and destroys it.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, being the good neighbor he is, he doesn't bother going over and telling them or anything. He just lets it be. And so Todd and Margot come home and find the window broken and the stereo destroyed. He's, well, what happened? I don't know, Margot. Well, why is the floor wet? I don't know, Margot.
That's right. So there's some destruction of property there. They could sue him for the damages, but they'd have to try to prove what took place or how it happened. And so that could be a problem because the icicle or ice spear is melted.
Yeah. I've always heard that you use an icicle as a perfect murder weapon. You kill somebody with it, and then the evidence melts.
So maybe they have cameras, so that could be some sort of possible evidence as to what took place if they're trying to sue him. Or there's another thing that we had talked about before is the theory of res ipsa. So whenever you have something that happens that you can't really explain how the damage actually occurred, but the accident kind of speaks for itself, so to say, then you can sue under a theory of res ipsa loquitur. And they could possibly do that given Clark's propensity for damaging their house. So yeah. This neighbor's always breaking our stuff, so he had to have done it.
And the gutters hanging out there probably, that's an indication. And it's like, you know, they saw him when he was starting up the ladder, and they said, he'll probably fall and break his neck. Oh, no, he'll fall, but we're not lucky enough for him to break his neck.
Yeah, that's right.
But, I think that they could probably have figured out that he was the one responsible for that, or they should just assume any damage that takes place. If Chevy Chase is next door, he did it.
And sue him under a theory of res ipsa.
Yeah.
So the next scene I have is when they're lighting the lights for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look, you'll notice that the sidewalks look really, really icy.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, you are liable for your own sidewalk that's in front of your house. So if someone slipped, you could be sued. And some cities actually have laws on the books where you can actually be fined by like the code inspector or zoning or something like that for failing to keep it clear. So that those sidewalks and that street look like a solid sheet of ice in all those outside scenes.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you have anything else?
Yeah, the other one I had when they're out there with the lights like that is it. I don't know exactly. I mean, I don't know the fire code for where they're supposed to be. But I would say that outlet with all those plugs plugged into it the way it was when they're flipping the switch on and off that's actually making the lights go on and off when he can't figure it out, that is definitely a fire code violation.
Oh, certainly. And if their house burns down because of it, their insurance might not pay because of what they did.
Yeah.
If they actually caused it themselves.
That looks like something that I've put together before when I'm putting up my Christmas lights. So I said that rather guiltily, that's a fire code violation because I don't want anybody to look at some of mine.
Yeah, and if you've never seen a Tommy Smurl exterior illumination around Christmas time, it's very Clark Griswoldish.
You taught me everything I know about exterior illumination.
That's right. Now, when he goes up into the attic to go hide his gifts, that ladder to the attic seems kind of like a problem, too. So somebody could hurt themselves on that pretty easily, and then there'd be some negligence for that because they know that ladder is a problem. They're on notice that that ladder is an issue. The other thing I thought was is that if Clark's mother-in-law actually knew Clark was up there and intentionally trapped him, she could have committed the tort of holding somebody against their will, which is kind of a cousin of kidnapping.
Well, that's true.
So I don't know if she knew he was up there or not, but given her her mean-spiritedness towards him, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, she's not very nice to him. I mean, like when he's out there struggling with the lights, she says, what a terrible waste of resources.
Yeah.
You know, one other one, I don't know how you would put this, but at one point when they actually get the lights working, they drain the power on the entire city.
Yeah.
That's got to violate something if you drain the entire power grid of your city.
Probably so. The lights finally come on, and the RV shows up with one of our favorite characters, Cousin Eddie.
Yeah.
And most neighborhoods have restrictive covenants, so having the RV on the street or in the neighborhood like that, parked in your driveway, might be a zoning issue.
Absolutely, especially one that looks like that.
Yeah, the people might not be so happy about the tenement on wheels,
as it's so aptly referred to.
That's right.
You know, and one other one I don't want to pass up is I'm a little confused as to when what happened when, but when he got the lights to come on and it blinded Todd and Margo, mm-hmm. and causing them to fall and drop their stuff, and then the lights go back out, and then they can't see in the dark, and they're falling down steps and everything else. I don't know if that could be considered something like an attractive nuisance or something that caused the damages in their house and caused them bodily injury.
Well, it wouldn't be an attractive nuisance. The attractive nuisance is the classically like something that's on your property that would bring somebody else there to hurt themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, like we always say, a dirt pile or a pile of rocks or a big hole or something right. like that. So the one thing you were talking about, the power drain like that, it kind of occurred to me that using that much power might give the police some sort of reason to want to come inspect your house, because whenever you have used that much power, that can be probable cause for police to come search your house, because you might be using that for grow lights for marijuana. So mm-hmm. That could be probable cause for the police to search your house, be using that much energy.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah. Now, when Cousin Eddie does arrive, he was not invited. I think that much is pretty much clear.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an uninvited guest on your property, that is technically trespassing under the common law definition of it. So
yeah.
Technically, Cousin Eddie, by walking onto his property like that and showing up, is trespassing.
Because he said, I couldn't be more surprised than if I woke up tomorrow morning with my face sewn to the carpet.
That's right. Where that came from, I don't know. After Eddie shows up, Snots, their dog, is off his leash when he runs up. And most cities do have leash laws. And if his dog had bit somebody or something like that, you can get major trouble for that, for having a dog off leash.
Yeah. I tell you what, that dog, I would not have let that dog in my house either.
Yeah. And he's just yakking on a bone. The little girl, Ruby Sue, she has a lip fungus that's not identified yet.
No, that's a little boy.
Oh, a little boy.
Ruby Sue's cross-eyed, remember? She fell in the well, went cross-eyed, then got kicked in the head by a mule and straightened him out. But the little boy has a lip fungus they hadn't identified yet.
Well, I think if he's got a lip fungus they haven't identified yet, he probably should be quarantined.
Well, not only that, he's being neglected.
That's true.
I feel sorry for that kid. He does not say one word through that whole movie. He just stands there and looks pitiful.
Yeah, he does, actually.
I looked up Ruby Sue, too, because she's got a cute little part in that. And she never did any acting after that movie again, but they showed a picture of her. She's like about 40 now. Mm-hmm. She looks exactly the same, just grown up. But in the face, you can tell that it's her. You know, a lot of people change dramatically from that to grown up hood, but she looks exactly the same. And I thought it was funny. She said she had to wear this terrible itchy wig through the movie that wasn't her real hair, because her mother had her hair cut in a mullet at the time. And the director did not want a mullet on her.
I don't know. I think a mullet would have fit in probably pretty good with that cast.
I know. You would think so.
So that brings us up to the classic sledding scene where they get to the top of the hill.
Yeah. That's the scene that you always loved the most, that almost caused you to wet the chair in the movie theater.
Yeah. So I looked at the time of it. I think it's about 47 minutes in. So about 47 minutes in, if you're in there for previews beforehand and you've already drank a extra large cherry Coke, about that time, the urge to use the restroom hits you pretty good. When you're laughing at something like that really hard and you got to go to the bathroom, it's trouble.
Now, I did think of one concerning that, and I'm not sure that it's really legitimate because we don't have enough information to know. But he was using some type of a experimental varnish or experimental something that they were making to make stuff slippery, silicone spray or something like that. So, you know, I don't know if that's corporate espionage or something, that he took something out that wasn't supposed to leave the lab there or something, because they were still working on it and might have been proprietary.
That's true. He probably shouldn't. There's probably some sort of a contractual agreement where he's not supposed to bring that out of his workplace. So, yeah, that's a good catch. Now, when they take off on the sled, or he takes off on the sled.
Later, dudes.
Later, dudes. I think there's probably some reckless endangerment going on there. He's definitely jaywalking when he slides across the street on the sled. And again, you're going to have destruction of property. Again, that seems to be his MO.
He went right through a cabin.
Yeah, he destroys the shed. He causes several motor vehicle accidents along the way. There's cars going left and right. And he goes flying off and hits a dumpster.
Yeah.
And I think destroys the dumpster, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know. I always imagine he ended up in the dumpster because they don't ever actually show the collision. They switch to Randy Quaid's face and he goes, bingo.
Yeah.
But here's what I want to know. How can they still see him from that, from their vantage point on top of the mountain that he took off with all the ground he covered and across the street and into the parking lot and everything, and they act like they've seen the whole thing?
Yeah, the whole geospatial alignment of that situation I don't think is quite on.
Yeah.
You just got to let reality kind of go for a little bit there and then just enjoy it.
Yeah, unless they had a drone following his plight. I don't believe that.
Now, the next scene that I came across, which is, there's not necessarily a crime there, but he is looking out his window and looking out where his pool's going to be when he gets it done. And you see Cousin Eddie walk along with his flippers on and his mask and jump in. And then it cuts. And then who do you see again?
Mary.
The lady from the...
From the store. He's still lusting after her.
Now, it's not a crime, but I think he is certainly having impure thoughts while looking out the window daydreaming, and he's probably going to have to confess that to his priest at some point.
The Puritans are going to get him for that.
Yeah. He's probably going to have to say a few Hail Marys as penance.
That was another thing. Why is that?
Because Mary, well, that's her name.
The other thing that little girl that played Ruby Sue said is that a lot of people always jumped on her and said, "You're the reason I didn't get to see the boobs." Because she shows up right as the girl's getting up out of the pool, right as Mary's getting up out of the pool. And right before they get to that part, she says, "Are you Santa Claus?" And it ends his whole fantasy there.
That always reminds me of the scene from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot like it. She had on a red bathing suit, too. I think it was a bikini, though.
Yeah, it's a very, very similar scene.
Phoebe Cates.
So that cuts to the next scene, which is probably one of the most glaring indiscretions in the movie. And I think even Clark acknowledges that it's not something that's right.
Crapper's full.
That's right.
I knew that's where you're going. Dumping raw sewage into the storm drain.
Yeah, so Cousin Eddie is improperly disposing of his chemical toilet into a storm sewer, and that's only meant for water runoff and not for all these chemicals and the sewage and stuff like that. And like I said, Clark even says that's illegal. So that was the no-brainer one. That was the easy one.
And Todd comes out of his house to go run, and he's stretching. All of a sudden, he stops. He catches whiff of the downwind smell, looks around, and goes right back in the house. That had to have been terrible.
And that plays a part later on in the movie, too.
Yeah.
And I guess we should have done a disclaimer at the beginning of this. If you haven't seen Christmas Vacation, none of this is going to make any sense. So you might want to stop and go ahead and watch that movie.
If you haven't watched it by now, it came out in 1989.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we watch it several times a year every year, but I don't know. I guess there's people that may not have seen it, but you need to see it if you haven't and just take it for what it's worth. It's a period piece.
I concur. So after the chemical toilet scene, the next one I came across was when Bethany and the other family members finally show up.
Yeah. Wrapping up their cat.
Yeah, Bethany wraps up her pet, and that's cruelty to animals. Who knows how long that poor cat's been wrapped up in there?
Well, but obviously the old woman has problems that she doesn't know that she did that.
Well, that's true.
So,
You don't think she had the mens rea to be cruel to her animal?
I don't think she had the wherewithal. She hardly knew where she was at because she didn't know. She didn't know, Clark, did you get a new house? And it's the same house they'd been in. She doesn't know where she's at.
Is Rusty still in the Navy?
The blassing. They want you to say the blassing.
So another thing I noticed is there's poinsettias all throughout their house. Mm-hmm. There's cats and dogs running around. Poinsettias are generally toxic to cats and dogs. So that's not a good thing to have in there.
Well, that's true. Now, they could be fake ones. We have poinsettias that we put out every year, but they're fake ones. They look real, though, from a distance.
Yeah.
But you're right. If they're real ones, they are poisoned animals.
So the next big event is the tree catches fire.
Well, there was one I have that's not really a crime, I guess. But this is the one. Remember I told you at the beginning I had one that's not really a crime, but to me it was?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a connoisseur of turkey. I love turkey. And what was done to that turkey was a crime. When they go to cut it open, it was just putrid, dry skin, and they're all sitting there trying to nibble bites of it and wash it down with water and everything else. That was a crime. It looked good, but it wasn't.
Well, look, there's the heart. I agree. That should be a crime. Destruction of turkey.
Yeah. But now so the tree, yeah.
Yeah, the tree goes up in smoke. That's just kind of an accident. I didn't really see any problem there.
Yeah, well, it was a whole combination of things because Snots the dog was drinking the water out of the bowl. Remember, they referred to that earlier in there. And he says, well, my tree's going to get dried out. Because Randy Quaid's answer is, well, that's all right. That tree water won't hurt him. He goes, yeah, but my tree's going to get dried out. So then Uncle What's-His-Name walks over there, lights up his stogie, and whoosh.
That's right. That was, I guess you could call that Chekhov's water.
Yeah, and of course the cat has already gotten fried under the chair at that point.
That's right.
But I don't know of any crime you could put on that other than that's just bad luck.
So Clark decides he needs to go out and get a new tree. So he goes out and cuts the tree down. And I don't know if that's in his yard or not. I think it probably is. But if it wasn't, it's against the law to cut down somebody else's tree and take it
right.
Like that.
It's obviously on the stretch between the two houses.
Yeah. And a lot of times places have laws about cutting trees down. You need to get different kinds of approval and things like that because trees are protected. When he cuts it down, it goes flying through the window of his neighbor's, Todd Margo's house again.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though he didn't intend for it to go through there, since he cut it down, he must have been negligent when he cut it down because it went flying through their window. So he's going to be responsible for the damages to their house at that point.
And he doesn't even go over and say, I'm sorry. He just grabs his tree and drags it and goes away.
Yep.
And he had to be aware of it. I mean, it made noise.
Yeah. So he brings the tree inside, and then he gets the Christmas bonus, which is the Jelly of the Month Club, which is the gift that keeps on giving all year round.
Well, I think I had one before that. Is this before or after the squirrel?
This is before the squirrel.
Okay, that's before the squirrel. Okay, then go ahead with the Jelly of the Month.
So he goes on a bit of a tirade, and he's asking for Frank Shirley to come to his house against his will and come there. And I forget his exact words, but basically he plants a seed for Cousin Eddie to go get his boss. So since he did that and Cousin Eddie went and did it and took an act in furtherance of it, he could be charged with conspiracy.
True.
Kidnapping.
Yeah.
Because he actually was the one who said that's what he wanted to have happen, and Cousin Eddie went and did it.
Because he lost his mind when the bonus was a Jelly of the Month Club instead of actual cash, which he needed to cover his Christmas pool.
And during the whole rant he goes on about his boss, he possibly could have defamed his boss. That's kind of right there on the line. He doesn't say anything more than just general insults. But there are some kind of insults which are defamation per se, when even if a person doesn't suffer any damages from, there's such horrible things to say that they're defamation and damages are presumed. I don't think he quite got there, but he gets close. So
he walks that line.
Yeah, he definitely does. Now, the next thing you were talking about was the squirrel.
Yeah, the tree that he chopped down out of either his yard or the neighbor's yard and dragged it in the house. He sets it up and he's putting like homemade ornaments on and stacking presents under it that are wrapped in newspaper and stuff because they don't have any wrapping paper left after the fire and everything. And they start hearing a squeaking noise, and he pulls up with the branches and looks, and here comes a squirrel jumping out of the tree, and it causes havoc. They run around the house, crashing, breaking things. Everybody's running around. Well, finally, the squirrel comes running towards the door, and the lady next door, Margot, has gotten fed up because of them breaking the window. So she's going to go over, put an end to it. She goes over to knock on the door. And right as she does, Chevy Chase opens the door. The squirrel hits her first and claws into her. And then here comes Snots and just bowls her over and crashes her to the ground. So yeah. I think that you're supposed to control your animal. Now, maybe they're not responsible for the squirrel, but the dog definitely.
Well, I got a little bit to unpack in there that I'm taking apart too. So in some states, actually having small wild creatures or large creatures like deer in your house again in captivity is actually against the law. You're not actually allowed to have a wild animal as a pet.
Well, so, I don't think they had it as a pet. It was an accidental pet.
Well, you know, I'm just saying if we're reaching for straws here and looking at everything. So
okay.
they're keeping this squirrel in their house and it's in there. And then they say they want to kill it because they're going to hit it with a hammer.
Yeah. I mean, the one lady passes out.
Is it even squirrel season? It could be against the law to kill a squirrel at this point.
Is there a squirrel season?
Yeah, there's squirrel season.
Oh, huh. And you can go to the park and hunt them?
Well, I don't know about that because you're not allowed to discharge firearms inside city limits and things like that. So,
We'll have to tell the criminals that do that they're not allowed to do that.
Now, whenever Todd and Margo are arguing about this whole thing while the squirrel's over there running around, she wants her husband to go over and punch Clark in the face. That's what she says.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants actually him to go over, and that would be assault if he went over and did that.
Right.
So, again, as you said, the dog's off the leash and goes flying out the door. And if the dog attacked Margo, then they could be responsible for that dog bite. Especially Clark could be responsible too because it's on his property. He's allowing that dog to be in his house.
And that dog was about the same size as her.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So after that, the dog attacks. She comes back into her house and punches Todd in the face. So that's a domestic assault right there.
That's true.
He could go file a domestic violence petition against her for what she did to him.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. You're right. I just thought he deserved it for not standing up for her. And she got that dog did that to her. So I thought that he deserved it. But you're right. Yeah. That's domestic assault, whether you deserve it or not.
That's right. So finally, the Frank Shirley comes back with Cousin Eddie. And that's obviously a kidnapping.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's the biggest one of all there. That's a major felony.
But after they go through everything, he actually fires Clark there on the spot. Mm-hmm. And we don't know if Clark has an employment contract, if he's a part of a union, if there's anything like that. So that firing could actually have been some sort of violation of his employment rights.
Yeah, maybe it didn't say that he wasn't allowed to kidnap his boss. It's okay. It's condoned.
Well, he's still got to go through the proper procedures, Tommy. That's what...
A contract is a contract.
That's right.
And just like thing, George Costanza, was that wrong? Because I really did not. I wouldn't have done it if I'd have known it was wrong.
He decided to change the bonus kind of unilaterally. Now, that could be part of people's salary, especially if it's some sort of contractual thing, like they're supposed to get a Christmas bonus. And there is an argument to be made that if you get that every year and you rely on it as part of your salary, like that's kind of part of the inducement for you to have the job, that it could be a violating a contract to give them a different bonus like that. So
yeah,
it could be some sort of cause of action suing the boss for that too.
Even if it is the gift that keeps on giving all year.
That's right. Now, the interesting thing that at the very end, did you have anything else before the very end?
Well, there is one scene where Eddie actually assaults the boss when he has him kidnapped. He has him all chained up and he kicks him.
Oh, he kicks him in the rear?
Yeah, while they're bringing him in the door.
Yeah.
So I had that. So.
Well, they charged him with kidnapping and assault. Two charges, two counts.
Yeah, that's right. So where are we at now? With the cop showing up or what?
Yeah, the cop showing up.
Well, in a way, of course, I guess it's not really, but it kind of reminded me as kind of a swatting situation at this point because the boss has already come to an understanding of what he did. And he apologized, and he already told him, I'm going to give you whatever you got last year plus 20%, and everything's okay. And then here comes all hell breaking loose with the cops coming through the windows and through the roof and dropping down on ropes and everything else. So it's kind of a swatting situation, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And I was watching this with my family, and Stephanie said, well, they can't do that. They don't have a warrant. And so the one thing that popped out to me is that, well, generally, yes, you cannot go into the house without a warrant. But there is an exception that you can go into a house if there's something called exigent circumstances. So if there's some sort of emergency, then they're able to do that. They don't need a warrant. They don't need probable cause. For example, if you're chasing somebody and they run in a house and then you just go straight into the house following them, then that's an exigent circumstance and you don't need a warrant.
You think they're somebody's an imminent danger.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So that's a good legal term for you there.
Yeah. Now I do take exception to one thing though. They didn't have a no knock warrant and they went to Todd and Margo's house and knocked on the door, and Margo, assuming it was Todd trying to get back into her good graces, just said, go away, Todd. And they knock on the door again. You're going to have to break the damn door down if you want to get in. Bam, here come the cops busting in her door and everything. Well, I don't think that they could do that to the neighbor because that wasn't where the danger was.
Well, but if you listen to what she said, you're going to have to break the damn door down if you want to come in. That was the offer. And well, they accepted it. They accepted it with her actions.
They never identified themselves.
That's an offer and acceptance. That's a classic contractual.
They needed to announce themselves as being cops, and they never did. I think that the police department is liable for that one. I think there's a crime there, but it's on behalf of the police department.
I think you're right, but that is a good way to illustrate offer and acceptance. She offered them to do it, and they accepted it.
They did.
So, the last thing that I have is that at the very end.
Then she went on to be vice president.
That's right. the uncle sparks up the cigar and it launches, it ignites the sewer gas, which launches the sled up in the air. So it's against the law, FAA and different kind of regulations to launch a rocket like that up into the atmosphere. So I think they're probably violating some sort of aviation type code there. I don't know which one, but. That ain't right.
Well, and the whole explosion was a result of Eddie dumping the crapper in there. And so that explosion would have been their responsibility, too, because of that.
That's true. Yeah.
So it would have been that. Yeah. The only other thing, the thing that after looking at that tenement on wheels sitting there, I thought, you know what? It probably had some kind of inspection codes that it couldn't have passed either. It probably was being driven illegally because I don't think it could have passed inspection.
Yeah. Oh, so. I forgot a couple here. I actually skipped through it. One interesting thing is that the boss says he's not pressing any charges. He doesn't want to do anything. It was his mistake. So sometimes it's not the victim's decision, especially if you're the victim of kidnapping.
Yeah.
They could have what's called Stockholm syndrome, where the kidnapping victim begins to identify with their kidnappers. So just the simple fact that he doesn't want to press charges right now doesn't really mean anything because the police had to come out. They obviously spent a lot of time and resources coming out to effectuate his rescue. And it's because of Cousin Eddie and what Clark did. So
yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That can you swear off kidnapping charges? I don't think that you can do that. No, that's all right. We're cool now.
Now you're going to have trouble. You're going to have trouble proving your kidnapping case if the victim is not going to cooperate with you. But that's just kind of the ramifications of it. But the bottom line is that it's not really the victim's decision to do that.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Clark and Eddie, at least, were probably going to have to go spend the night in jail until all those things were sorted out.
Yeah, possibly.
Now, you also had the captain threaten to beat the boss with a rubber hose.
Yeah, I have that down too. It's a classic police brutality joke.
Yeah.
The rubber hose doesn't leave any marks. That and a phone book, I think, are the two ones. So but that was all I have. That came down to 47, but you had a few in there that I didn't have. So I think we
went over 50.
Yeah, we definitely got a bunch of stuff from that.
I think only a couple of them were felonies. Most of them were misdemeanors or fines. And there was a couple that would have been lawsuit type things, civil suits, not so much criminal things.
Yep. And there's one mortal sin, according to the Catholic Church.
The turkey being ruined. Is that what you mean?
I was going to go with the impure thoughts. But.
Well, that was a mortal sin to me, the turkey being ruined like that. Because I sit around all day waiting for the turkey. I'm like the guy in Christmas Story, the dad who loves the turkey so much, he's constantly in nibbling on it. That's the way I am. So that's the way I would be if the Bumpus dogs dragged off my turkey.
I will tell you what, I love turkey, but I like it usually more for the leftovers, not so much for the main dish. But I will tell you what, the one we had this year, Stephanie found a recipe and she brined it for 24 hours in this brine and then baked it. And it was probably the most flavorful turkey I think I've ever had. It was delicious. It was even better than ones I've fried.
Really? I say deep fried ones are the ones that have the most flavor to me that we've done before.
This one had way more flavor than the deep fried one. So I'm a fan of brining. I will be brining my turkeys till the day I die from this point on. So,
well, you're a briny bro.
I'm a briner for life.
Well, so. I guess that's we kind of took the fun out of Christmas Vacation there, breaking it down legally, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so. But
it's a funny movie. Watch it and don't pay any attention to the legal stuff. Just take it for what it is. It's just pure, thoughtless, brainless imitation. I mean, entertainment, not imitation. Entertainment.
Who in the world are they imitating?
Me. The girl said they always identified me with Clark Griswold and putting the lights up and everything else. So.
You know what? They're not the only ones.
Well, I guess this will be our last one until next year.
Yeah, that's right. We're gonna take some time off the rest of December, and we'll put our next episode up in 2021.
Yeah, thank God 2020 will be over. It's been a hell of a year. Can't end soon enough.
Everybody has a happy holiday and a great new year, and we'll see you on the other side.
That's right. Everybody have a good one and a safe one, and get those vaccines as soon as they're available.
Yes, absolutely. ASAP.
ASAP. Got a lot of sap in there. A lot of sap.
A little full. A lot of sap. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable Podcast for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is Christmas in a pandemic. With the arrival of a vaccination, things are certainly starting to look better, and it couldn't be happening at a better time. With daily new infections and daily new deaths both reaching record highs, and hospitals literally shutting down, and over 300,000 dead, we were reaching a breaking point as a country. Mask fatigue or quarantine fatigue are being given for the reason. People are just tired of having this virus disrupt our freedom as Americans. So the hell with it. We will just refuse to comply. You know, you would think that with 300,000 being dead, a lot more people would be personally affected. But I guess not, because there are a hell of a lot of people that just don't really believe this is real or that they personally have anything to worry about. We want our restaurants, we want our bars, we want our sporting activities, and mostly we want our parties. I guess we are just tired of drinking alone, basically. Here is the thing, though. There is finally a light at the end of the tunnel. Remember when 15 days to flatten the curve became no end in sight? Vaccines are being administered, now, as we speak. It is the beginning of the end for this pandemic. We have more reason to show patience now than we have in the last 10 months. I mean, no one wants to be the last one killed when the war is already over. That means you died for nothing. It was over, but you just didn't get the word. Facebook reminds me daily of Santa trains or Disney Christmas trips we have taken, Christmas shows we've all done together, and Christmas parades we have gone to. We do a lot of things together as a family, especially around Christmas. It is also about the only time all year that I get to have all of my kids and my grandkids together under one roof. So this Christmas won't be a particularly great one. The only Christmas activity that I have been able to have with my grandkids, Charlie and Cooper, is to ride in the car around several neighborhoods and look at the Christmas lights that people have up. No Santa trains or Christmas parades or Christmas shows. The worst part is, my child that lives in New York, Taylor, won't be able to come home for Christmas for the first time ever. Seems the antibodies are no longer present, even though Taylor had COVID back in March. You see, Taylor volunteers at the City Mission in Brooklyn and said that if coming home meant possibly killing their mom or dad, that would be something they couldn't live with. So Taylor is making the hard choice to stay there. Alone on Christmas, and it breaks my heart. But I understand that it is the right thing to do, and it would be irresponsible for me to beg for a change of mind. This is a tough disease, and it has required sacrifice from all of us in one way or another. But there is hope now. There is a vaccine. We just have to be patient, and we have to be smarter than maybe we have been in recent months. Don't be that one to die after the war is over. Hopefully, we will be returned to normal for Christmas next year, and maybe we will appreciate each other just a little bit more after having so much taken away from us over the last year. So Merry Christmas to everyone that listens, and please stay safe. Also, Merry Christmas to my Taylor. We'll make up for this when everything is better. I love you and miss you. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.